The following is an unrehearsed interview with Iowa Senator Chuck Grassley. Participating in today's public affairs program are Brian Fancher of KLMJ in Hampton and Aaron Summers of the Pocahontas Record Democrat in Pocahontas. Brian, you can start us off with a question for Senator Grassley.
Wanted to get more of your thoughts about the latest with the EPA and with the situation with the RFS and all these refineries. What's your thoughts about all that?
My thoughts are that we've got to get this EPA turned around so that, number one, they actually carry out what the president intends, that he deliver fully on ethanol. Number two, to make sure that whatever they announce in the fall for next year is actual numbers that we're going to use rather than having discounted by 10 or 15% by waivers that, quite frankly, are more numerous now under this EPA than they were under Obama's EPA. And we ought to be able to do that in a way that tells us ahead of time what waivers are going to be given so that that figure can be worked into the amount of ethanol that's got to be consumed next year by the petroleum companies as a mixture, so that we actually, when we're told we're going to get X billions of gallons of ethanol, that that's what we actually get. And so far, we have seen this administration, this EPA, I should say, because I think the president's heart is in the right place on this. This EPA under Pruitt, no longer there. Wheeler's taken over. I hope better days are here now that Wheeler's in place, but I can't be proved to that yet. But in the meantime, Pruitt came in and decided he was just going to willy-nilly give these waivers out for small refineries, whether they were quote-unquote hardship cases or not. And we got to get back to the hardship case being the true measure of whether or not there ought to be waivers given to small refineries. So we still got to fight. I guess another way to put it, we have to continue to fight big oil just like we did 30 years ago. Aaron?
I just saw that the state of New York had just passed a law that allows Congress access and particularly the president's tax returns, although the bill is written more broadly than that. Is there any value in looking at the president's tax returns at this point? Is that something that you're interested in? I know this keeps coming up. Is this something that you're following, or is it just kind of beating a dead horse at this point? I don't know.
Well, I think it's another example that the Democrats thought they were going to get a Mueller report that would lead to the impeachment of Trump, and Mueller came back that there was no collusion or no crime. So they're continuing this battle wherever they can, and that's where it is politically, and it's entirely a political maneuver on their hand. Now, I'm not interested in targeting people for political reasons, but I would say this, that in a very general way, there might be a legitimacy for my Finance Committee and the House Ways and Means Committee to have access to certain income taxes where the name of the taxpayer is not known to the members of Congress and the Senate, but it's used as a way of demonstrating for a legislative purpose, do we need to change the tax laws some way? Because I have been involved in meetings like that where we have had real taxpayers' tax forms, not knowing whether they were Mary Smith's or Joe Blow's, because that was redacted, for information. But this is purely a political move on their hand, going after the presidents. And no justification for doing it just for presidents. Brian?
Yes, Senator, I was going to ask you, too, the latest on the situation at the southern border with all the migrants and people trying to come in. I know there was the law the president signed here in the last week that you guys had passed, but anything new to report today?
Only that the bill was passed, and hopefully for the rest of this fiscal year, gives resources enough at $4.6 billion to the Homeland Security Department to make sure that the humanitarian needs of the migrants are met. And that's what it's for, humanitarian needs, including even things like more judges and also resources to inform migrants of their constitutional rights in the courtroom and under the law, and for diapers and other things that you read about the humanitarian needs that are not being met. But I think we ought to stop to think of why we're here, because on October 1st, we decide to appropriate X millions of dollars and billions of dollars for the next fiscal year. So we anticipated so much need on October 1st last year. Nobody ever anticipated 800,000 migrants coming this year illegally into our country. And so you have resources for far fewer number of migrants you're going to have to deal with this massive influx. And then everybody wonders why there's a humanitarian need. And then you also wonder why there was an opportunity in the disaster bill to put this money in, and Democrats fought it. And Democrat presidential candidates think we ought to have an open border, et cetera, et cetera. So we have this mess because nobody planned on it, and Congress, because over Democratic opposition, finally got the money appropriated, but 6 weeks later than it should have been. So we hopefully we overcome this problem now. Aaron?
Speaking of the budget, as we're approaching budget talks again, there is some opposition. There's talk about an inflation, a cost of living adjustment in Congress's salaries, and there's some opposition from some, particularly Democrat representatives. I mean, what's your take on that cost of living adjustment, and do you think your constituents care very much, or are they kind of far removed from that?
I think if you ask me to prove over the last years that I've been in Congress now, more than three decades, I could show you that I haven't voted for a salary increase and have voted almost every year since 2009 and a few times before that, that when there was an automatic pay raise, which the law allows, Congress for the last 10 or 11 years has voted not to accept it. Now, what is being proposed here, I think, is for this automatic pay increase to go into effect. I can understand the rationale for it, but I'm still not for it anyway. But the rationale that people are using is that every other federal government employee and military person has had some sort of a raise during this 10-year period of time, and why should Congress be cut out of not having a raise when everybody that's lower income and higher incomes than we have get salary increases? That's the justification for it as a matter of equity. I don't buy that argument, but that's what they're arguing for. Because every year we give federal government employees raises, even our staff gets raises. But members of Congress, in other words, 435 million people, 535 people out of millions of government employees are the only ones that don't get a raise. Brian?
Yes, Senator, one other question for you. Just want to get your thoughts about what's going on with Iran these days. It sounds like they're pushing hard to enrich more uranium.
Well, they're violating the agreement, and by doing it, they're getting themselves, they've already been in trouble with the United States for other reasons, but there's four other countries that were involved in the agreement to this agreement with Iran. They're trying to get those other four countries to put pressure on the president to give up on the sanctions. I don't think they're going to accomplish that. But now Iran, because they're going over the limits that the agreement allowed, are even getting those four countries irritated with them. So I don't know whether they're accomplishing their goal, but they want to do to Trump just like they did to Obama. The sanctions were working, and then they plead that they will reach an agreement with Obama. If he takes the sanctions off, he takes the sanctions off. He gets an agreement, but it's only an agreement that Iran not nuclearized for the next 8 or 9 years. It's not forever. And this president wants denuclearization forever. So Obama was hoodwinked by the Iranians. Trump is not going to be hoodwinked by Iranians. Aaron, yours will be the last question.
Okay. I just read, I was looking at some upcoming health care and health insurance legislation, and one mentioned that Senator Alexander has a bill that includes a provision that would raise the age to buy tobacco to 21. Do you see that getting any traction and becoming law?
Yes. Either part of Alexander's bill or as a separate bill. I believe it can become law, yes. And I'm going to vote for it.
Thank you, Brian and Aaron, for participating in today's public affairs program. This has been Senator Chuck Grassley reporting to the people of Iowa.